Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, guys and girls. The program you are about to hear will be both fun and educational, but it is not a substitute for medical advice. Although we are doctors, we are not your doctors.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Travel Medicine. This is Dr. Santosh, your friendly neighborhood pediatric infectious disease doc and researcher.
Still your friendly neighborhood internal medicine doc, Dr. J, but this week I'm co-piloting.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. He gave me a captain's hat and everything. I'm so cheesed to be your captain today. This is so much fun. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't have a theme song or anything like that, but I was trying to think of some way to like make some lyrics on the fly the way that you're so good at. And I was like, oh, who's that peeking around the biological cabinet? It's Dr. Santosh. Yay.
With the beakers and the labs, the Bunsen burners, the whole set. It's Dr. Santosh.
But
rounding up the science, every corner of the globe.
Yeah, just like that. We are actually going to many corners of the globe today, children. I hope you enjoy this because, yeah, I think we have articles, Josh, from across the world today. And the reason that this is Santosh's Science Corner is because
sort of stories coming out of his lobes? It's Santosh and the Science Corner.
Dun-dun. Exactly right. Yeah, we found really cool articles from all over the place, and I sent them over. And as usual, Dr. Josh, you put together an amazing, beautiful outline and scripted. And you just, you know, you gave me the captain's hat, though. And much like the, you know, the little boy in Airplane who got to sit in Captain Rogers' lap, I get to steer for a bit. And I feel fond about that.
So instead of our usual Muppet Arms Journal Club, we have a Santosh Science Corner for you this week.
Yeah. And you can do the little, you know, not quite jazz hands, but like kind of the open hands right under your chin where you're just going to go back and forth a little.
Finger guns are involved.
Oh, you could do finger guns. Absolutely. Yeah. I like to think myself of the male brown Miss Frizzle of this particular science boat.
would explain why you're referring to our audience as children. So take us away. Story number one.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start off this wonderful science corner. We're going to go around the first corner here. At, oh, Josh, it's a peanut patch.
Oh, boy, I sure hope there's a jelly patch next.
That's not how jelly grows there, Josh, but okay. Yeah, I was so happy to find this. We have an amazing new colleague I do at the center that I work at in pediatric allergy and immunology, and she taught me a little bit about this. But I went out and I found on Science. So here in the United States, we have AAAS, the American Association for the Advancement of Science. They give me a beautiful journal feed. And one of them was talking about Dr. Greenhawt et al., H-A-W-T, creating a beautiful epicutaneous, which means on the skin, immunotherapy for little kids with a peanut allergy. And this was actually a phase 3 trial that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine this May, 2023. So, Josh, we have a beautiful safety and efficacy trial now. And I want to start out with the problem. You've got little kids who've got peanut allergies. We've come a long way in the last few years, and the world has now changed its stance. Instead of holding off on giving peanuts to kids because we were worried about allergies, we learned that early introduction is the way to go. So as much as possible, we're trying to introduce peanuts early, but you still have kids who are allergic, and sometimes it can be dangerous. So you actually want to desensitize them. And you've got a couple of routes that you can go down. The first one is actually oral. So you just grind up the peanuts, you make a peanut butter, and you feed
increase. You will eat this and like it.
Yeah. Well, you feed increasing concentrations to a little toddler. So you dilute it in.
You know, like in The Princess Bride. Over the years, I slowly built up
a tolerance.
Immunity or tolerance to Iocane butter.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Only instead of being a deadly, deadly poison to most people, it is deadly to these little kids. So in this particular case, you've got, oral therapy, which has been the standard now for a little while. And it's not perfect. It doesn't work, 100% of the time. And it does require that after you complete the oral immunotherapy, that the kid constantly gets challenged with peanuts so that, not challenged like, oh, put them up, peanuts. But, that you keep feeding them.
At any point during the day, someone can walk up and hand them something nutty.
Yeah.
Like, eat this.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a food challenge coin.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you have to keep that going. Otherwise, it will lose efficacy over time. But you do have the problem that oral challenge has to be done, where you're building up the tolerance. It really has to be done in a clinic where it's safe. You have EpiPens ready to go in case you have an anaphylactic reaction, all this kind of a thing. So I said, hey, well, we do have another immune interface, aside from our mouths, we have a skin interface. So what if we took some patches and we packed them full of peanuts that really satisfy? So...
You're not you when you're allergic.
Yeah, exactly. I'm having the commercial where you have like the Gary Busey or whatever. So, and then they slap a patch on him and it's like, oh, this is, yeah, absolutely. And he turns into a normal self. But yeah, so what we've got is we've got kids. And they've got a placebo-controlled trial. So some of the patches are containing peanut protein and others are placebo. And you randomize the children. And what you do is you say, all right, wear this patch. Okay, it contains a little bit of peanut protein, about 250 micrograms, which is, I guess, 1/1000th of a peanut, Josh.
Which is an acid dose of a peanut. All right,
yeah.
Let's put this into context.
Yeah.
362 toddlers, ages 1 to 3.
Yes.
In 8 countries, including the US, Canada, Australia, and I think the UK.
Yeah.
Nearly 85% of the toddlers completed the trial with most of those who didn't, withdrawn by their parent or guardian. And then they had to wear this microdose of peanut butter between their shoulder blades, where children could not reach it if they didn't like it.
That, yeah, it has an adhesive on it, but, you know, kids peel stuff off, so you have to plant it on their back.
Had to do this every day without fail for a year. That is an amazing amount of time to commit to giving a toddler a Snicketine patch.
Yeah. You do. You have to stick with it. And of course, Josh, it wasn't easy. So there was quite a bit of attrition. Okay. So originally 362 kids underwent randomization, 244 with the patch, 118 with a placebo patch. But ultimately, only about 208 in one arm and then 99 in the other arm completed the trial, because there were, you know, non-adherence and withdrawing from the protocol and all this kind of a thing.
End of it, really only, I mean, two-thirds of the children were able to tolerate a higher amount of peanut protein. But then again, a lot of children outgrow peanut allergies.
Oh, yeah, over time, right? So that's why we had to compare this to placebo. And that's really, really important to make sure that, especially in a case like this, where children do outgrow allergies, it does the peanut patch do better than just, you know, a sticker?
Like, I'm just picturing a 3-year-old sitting there, like, spreading butter on a piece of bread going, yeah, I used to be.
Yeah, it's true. So,
I used to be dependent on the peanut patch, but now look at me. And
look at me now, Dad.
But one of the limitations is the study acknowledged was the exclusion of children with severe peanut allergies. So you had to have no peanut allergy or a very mild one. It also lacked diversity, as there was only one child identified as a person of color in each group.
Was a very Eurocentric trial for sure. it was supposed to be meant for, I guess, a European and North American population. But as we know, that population is quite diverse. So I was a little bit sad about this. Yeah, there was one black kid in each of these. There was a significant percentage that were Asian. So, you know, whereas about 60% in each arm were Caucasian, you know, 16 to 20% were Asian. But you're right. We were missing a lot of other peoples from around the world in this population.
They didn't say what brand of peanut butter they were using.
No, it's not a brand. Stop it. You stop it now.
Because I want to know what choosy doc, do choosy docs choose?
Yeah. No, this one is actually, you know, purified standard peanut protein that you're going to put in here. It's not going to be
the most boring, like,
yeah, I know. I know
store brand's name.
Yeah, I know. But we have to get through this so that at the end of it, you can actually have the kid taste some peanuts, you know, at the end of it, and see who gets an allergic reaction and who doesn't. And this was kind of the cool part. So if we say just primary endpoint response, right? Like, how did the patch do versus the placebo? So the kids who got the placebo, about a third of them, 33.5%, they were actually able to tolerate well the challenge of the peanuts at the end of the thing. But the folks who were on the peanut patch, two-thirds, so 67% of that group that were analyzed, actually tolerated their challenge, pretty darn well. Enough that you didn't have to worry about any kind of anaphylaxis or even, you know, a mild to moderate allergic reaction. So, you know, and that trend actually followed through various different analyses. Now, Josh, this is not as good as what is currently the standard, which is graded oral challenge, because with a graded oral challenge that we do right now, you can actually get 70, sometimes 80% response. So, you know, we still have to get to, you know, that kind of a level. But the big difference actually in this was that the safety profile was actually significantly better than what would be expected a child going through an oral challenge or an oral challenge graded response. So it's actually less efficacious in terms of banishing the evil allergy, but it is much more safe.
Now, if I recall correctly, a drug used to treat peanut allergy for kids 4 to 17 was approved in 2020, called Palforzia, and quickly purchased by Nestle.
Yeah.
It's because capitalism.
Yeah, that sucks.
And it is essentially no better than graded oral challenges. He's choking again. B minus.
Yeah. Not a challenge like that, but yeah.
Not a challenge like that, though.
Sure, so. Fine. But yeah, you're right. Because we were doing a antigen challenge, right? Like we were, in this case, by skin, trying to challenge these kids so that they train their immune system in order to slow their roll when it came to anaphylaxis. We really couldn't select patients who had a history of severe peanut anaphylaxis. So meaning that they had a history where they had peanuts before and they needed to be rushed to the hospital and maybe even put on a breathing machine for a while because their throat closes up or something like that. So we couldn't really get past that at this point where those kind of kids could be approved to be trialed on this. So we really don't know how this will do for severe allergies, but for kids with mild to moderate allergies, it seems to be a fair alternative if they, for instance, don't have access to the oral challenge method.
All right. Well, my spiritual Mario brother, why don't you take us down the pipe of medical research and into the next story.
Wahoo! So yeah, let's talk shrooms, and let's talk about an evil shroom. No, I'm not talking about Goombas. I'm talking about the death cap mushroom.
It's a me, Amanita phalloides.
Yeah, Amanita phalloides, exactly. The world's most poisonous mushroom, okay? And this little bugger is responsible for about 90% worldwide of mushroom-related fatalities, which, okay, that's not a massive number of fatalities compared to some big baddies like COVID.
You don't get the name destroying angel mushroom for nothing, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, this is true. And but the big problem with death caps is that, especially for people who are, you know, they're going out and they're amateur harvesters, right? Because they want to try for the first time. Oh, I want to try naturally harvesting truffles or other mushrooms and things like this. And they catch a death cap. And number one, there is no cure, really. You know, if they're ingested and that phylloidin, poison starts doing its work, you're going down. A lot like our friend tetrodotoxin with pufferfish. And, you know, it's a scary bit.
There is no cure. Or is there?
Yeah.
Your story may just indicate otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, the other problem is that a lot of the time you're out in the middle of nowhere, or you have symptoms that are, well, you know, it may look like other poisonings and this kind of a thing, and the person can't tell you, oh, I ate this mushroom and this kind of a thing, and they're already dying.
So the death's cap mushroom belongs to a family known as the lethal Amanitas, which would make a fantastic band name.
Yeah, it comes from its genus Amanita, right? So the toxin is alpha amanitin.
Now, Amanita moment to tell you about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It attacks the liver and kidneys, which essentially stops the cells in those organs from making protein, and everything grinds to a halt, which means unless you get some form of treatment, as far as we know, which doesn't exist, your kidneys fail, requiring dialysis, your liver fails, meaning transplants of organs were the only kind of known solution. Until a team of Chinese and Australian scientists may have found a possible antidote.
Yeah, I'm so excited by this because it's not only an antidote that's, you know, hey, we can actually combat this thing. And what are we talking about? Worldwide, 10,036 exposure events, right? 38,000 illnesses and 788 deaths between 2010 and 2020. So not a small problem, okay? But here's the fun part, Josh. It looks like, you know, the toxin inhibitor is indocyanine green, which is a pretty commonly used like food coloring.
And also used to diagnose diseases in the eye.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So we already know that it's biocompatible, which is awesome.
So this group of Chinese and Australian scientists basically used CRISPR to brute force an antidote to death cap poisoning. And what that means is we have completed research or completed the, how do you say, we have completed sequencing of the human genome.
Yes, yes. So, and we don't have as many examples of human genomes as we want to, but our bank is getting, you know, more and more robust worldwide by the hour. It's ridiculous.
So this research team took several human cells and edited them to break them into individual.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Well, genes. Gene A, B, C, and so on. Then they gave each of those genes this death cap toxin to see what survived. And one of those surviving plates was noted to have a broken gene called STT3B.
Yeah, it's very, you know, easily named, and it helps us remember. No, I'm sorry.
Don't mess with the STT3B on gene 23. Actually, I can't verify what gene it's on. But
or in chromosome, you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah. So the team then used a computer program to look for any FDA-approved drugs that might block this STT3B from working. So they basically went to, you know, Scholastic Google and said, well, rather than developing something, is there anything that already exists that we can use? And they did find a match in this compound indocyanine green. They, in typical scientist fashion, all made eye contact saying, we have to test this, turned around and gave it to mice. And 4 hours after poisoning, it increased their survival rates by halting liver damage. Now, this is exciting less for the mice, but more because this is a new way to let CRISPR kind of do the work of the drug research and development, saying, is there anything we already have that could accomplish this?
Yeah, the methodology in this case matters much more so than the actual results. Although the results are very, very encouraging that, yeah, you know, when we were able to, you know, feed these mice ICG, indocyanine green, and then challenge them with amanitin, right, an alpha amanitin poison, that they did better. They survived, and then their liver enzymes were, you know, much more robust, you know, and healthy than the mice that didn't get the inhibitor. And Josh, you know, they didn't all live, unfortunately. When you feed just the poison to your mice, 100% of them die eventually, about at 30 days. Actually, only after about 8 or 9 days. But, you know, 50% survival, which is a 50% improvement from zero for sure. So
we're still a ways off from seeing this in human use, and you probably really should only go with expert mushroom foragers or not eat random things you find in the woods.
Both
are good options.
Both are good. But please do look forward to CRISPR screens, so genome-wide CRISPR screens, being used in this fashion, paired with supercomputers and, you know, computational analysis to find drug targets and compatible either inhibitors or activators or whatever it is, so that our process of drug discovery goes a lot faster. And I'm hoping, Josh, that we find a lot more of these, you know, kind of diamonds in the rough where, hey, you know what? The answer was inside you all along. If you had had ICG injected into your eye for, you know, tracking or that kind of
the real antitoxin was the friends we made along the way. Yeah,
exactly right. So this type of high throughput stuff, you know, we could be on the cusp of being able to find and engineer solutions to, you know, biochemical problems a lot faster than before.
Now that you have finished nibbling on deadly peanuts via patch.
Okay, fine.
Or finding distant solutions to death cap poisoning from mushrooms.
Yes.
I think it's time we turn to some dental health.
Oh, yes. Always important. And, you know, people out there should know, especially here in the United States, physicians are not given good training on dental care and health. It really is, you know, it's a lacking kind of a thing in our education.
Especially for bones that grow out of your face.
Yeah.
So,
and in pediatrics, like several rows of bones that grow out of your face.
So what? Several rows? What are they, sharks?
Well, So
don't
Google baby skull teeth. Just don't, you know, it'll freak you out.
So I know you've been asking yourself, what if my toothpaste could explode when exposed to ultrasound?
No, nobody asked that question ever. What is the matter with you?
Nobody, really?
Okay. Well, somebody in Wuhan University in China and their colleagues asked this question, yes.
So researcher Xian Zeng Zhang,
okay,
at Wuhan University has developed a microscopic bomb toothpaste that can be detonated with an ultrasonic toothbrush, but it's for plaque and specifically biofilms.
Yeah, so this isn't like 007, you know, James Bond carrying bomb in his molar type.
It is if you're a bacteria.
Oh, damn. Yeah. So this is like, instead of like Skyfall or Casino Royale, this is like, you know, the plaque within. Da, wah, wah.
The plaque who loved me.
The plaque. You only plaque twice? More James Bond plaque and tooth puns.
Live and let plaque. Thunder plaque. Plaque rigger.
Molar finger. No, oh god, oh sorry, that just gave me the worst visual.
Casino plaque owl.
Maybe gold molar. Yeah.
So what these researchers in China did was create micrometer sized capsules, which Zhang and his team named microbombs, that are made up of calcium peroxide, iron, and tannic acid, what you might find in a particularly strong and magnetic cup of tea.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course, because tannins are naturally kind of occurring in a lot of fruit and vegetables, too. Yeah.
So when these microbombs are hit with ultrasound, the perfluorohexane, which is a reactive gas, or it's a reactive liquid that can rapidly become gas, causes the microbombs in the toothpaste to break apart, triggering a chain reaction converting calcium peroxide to hydrogen peroxide, which destroys biofilms, in this case, on teeth.
Oh, nice. Okay. And this is much better in terms of like being a small detonation and release of hydrogen peroxide, because if you just rampantly put H2O2 in your mouth, you'd clean a lot, but you'd also get a lot of mucosal cellular damage. So
please don't do that.
Yeah, yeah. So this is in very, very small quantities that get generated when the PLGA vesicles, which is a reactive oxygen species, right?
Yes.
We use the same kind of thing inside of our bloodstream when our granulocytes, our neutrophils, go off and they capture a bacteria and they bam, and they fire off and shoot off a bunch of hydrogen peroxide in teeny amounts to kill the bacteria, but everything around it as well.
So this was treated on biofilms derived from human saliva and successful, but truthfully, it may or may not be better or even equal to destroying biofilms than just a regular toothbrush.
Yeah.
However, the concept of taking microcapsules that can then be remotely activated or detonated
yeah.
with sonic waves makes it more interesting idea of how would you disrupt biofilms in more hard to reach places such as inside the body.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So even though this was developed for fighting the types of biofilms that coat our teeth and gums and eventually lead to tooth decay, we could potentially deliver these little particles, I don't know, into something like a bone, or if you had like a prosthetic joint sitting somewhere where a biofilm formed, and then, you know, just a simple ultrasound machine like you get with, you know, a probe to the skin, and then just, you know, gentle ultrasound waves and these little vesicles, pew, 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 and the biofilm. Ooh, golden eye tooth. I was waiting for it. That's the one. Okay. Moving on.
The hygienist who loved me.
Oh, that's so much better. Oh, that's awesome.
Fillings are forever. Filings.
All right, Josh. Let's do one of the famous, Dworetsky style segues, going from tooth decay to tooth decay also relates to coronary artery disease and peripheral vascular disease and vascular disease in general, like heart attacks and strokes, which microstrokes can lead to dementia, but we also want to prevent dementia. So we want to keep our teeth healthy, but we want to keep our brains healthy too. And to do that, we need to go on the internet. Ha ha!
Is this what you think my segues are like?
No, that's I'm trying to do a poor man's estimation.
is that how I'm coming off?
Like a weird chain of unrelated events finally landing on the subject at hand? No, never. What are you talking about? Yeah, internet usage is correlated with, you know, less dementia.
So all these studies that we bring you every week, the mere act of searching for the bizarre corners, edges of nowhere in medicine, may help stave off dementia later on in life.
Yeah, and a fair kind of warning, I guess, ahead of time before we leap with both feet into these troubled waters.
Sketchy science warning.
Sketchy science warning. This is it's a well-done study, I think, using a really well-defined cohort in the United States and examining with good statistical models. But this is a correlational study. So this is not one of these where you can prove causation really well, but I will say, Josh, that it was well analyzed, and the effect that we're seeing, or the correlation that we're seeing, is quite powerful. It's a neat one.
So tell us about the study. Tell us about the one question survey.
Yeah. So what we have is there is a large study called the Health and Retirement Study. This is an ongoing longitudinal survey. So you really just have...
of adults 50 years and older.
Yeah. So, you know, anybody who's past their, you know, half centenarian mark.
Lord help you if you say prime.
There you go. So they are, they're sampled, and basically every couple of years they're followed and given a list of questions to answer. So this is pretty much all survey or interviews over the phone or something like that, along with demographic characteristics, race, age, sex, all that fun stuff, health, and then cognitive performance. And this kind of population is available as a pool for analysis. And essentially, in this particular case, they used the modified telephone interview for cognitive status, or TICSM, and they basically asked some questions to see how the person is doing cognitively. So you're basically testing dementia over the phone, and then you're asking for self-reporting on the other side, how long they are on the internet, as well as, Josh, several other exposures to look for, you know, covariates and other confounding variables and things like that, right?
So
we have their, you know, educational status, their marital status, their income, how the rest of their health is going, although it's self-reported. And then,
so they basically sent him this huge thing and looked at the answer to the following question.
Yes.
Question, singular.
Singular.
Do you regularly use the World Wide Web, okay, boomer, or the internet for sending and receiving email or any other purpose, such as making purchases, searching for information, making travel reservations, watching TikToks? Not one that was included, maybe should have been. But the analysis included 18,000 adults age 50 to 64 who, I would like to point out, did not have dementia at baseline.
Right, right.
And responded to at least one survey over the 14-year period that the study was carried out.
Yeah.
Once you responded, they would follow you every year. Not on Twitter.
or not, you know, like hiding in the bushes, but they'd call you back. Yeah.
Until you stopped completing the survey.
Yes.
Or they had followed you for about 8 years.
Right. Now, Josh, there was another question. So about 11,000, you know, members of this survey answered the question of, you know, I have, you know, some internet regular use or something like that. There was a secondary question where only about 4,000 respondents came in, and they were able to say, oh, I spend, you know, no time at all on the computer, or anywhere from, like, you know, 0.1 to 2 hours, 2 to 4, 4 to 6, 6 to 8 hours per day. So they were able to get, you know, some of these respondents so that they could get kind of a dose-dependent relationship on dementia, which was kind of neat.
Overall, about 65% of participants consider themselves regular internet users.
Yeah.
And of those, about 43% had a reduced risk of dementia during the follow-up period, which was cumulative. So for every survey period where they reported they were regularly using the internet, dementia risk continued to drop by about 18 to 20% for that year. However, it's very vague. I mean, we don't know what kind of websites they're looking at. Are these people playing online chess, you know, sure, making pin boards, bidding on eBay, or browsing internet porn?
And the opposite is possible as well, Josh, in that if these folks were already cognitively intact, meaning maybe they didn't have a dementia risk to start with, so they're with it, they're capable and everything, and, you know, they're bored or they're stuck at home or anything like this. So what are you going to do, especially if you're disabled to any degree and you can't walk or move around? You're going to, you know, nowadays be on a device of some kind if your mind is still working and clicking along. So I don't think it's fair to say that one led to the other. I think it's fair to say it was a pretty solid correlation. Trying to find like a dose-related dependent, so meaning that like the more time you spent on the internet, the less risk of dementia you had, that didn't work out. So the folks who were on there for like 6 to 8 hours didn't necessarily have a lower risk than people who are on there for like a couple of hours.
That's what I said. They need to be looking at what are the websites or to what use is the internet being put in those people? Because wouldn't it be funny? So that's it for this week. Unless you have anything else hidden in that corner, Santosh.
Oh, no. I'm going to, slink quietly away, behind this rack of conicals right here. Yeah.
Those were some great ideas, Santosh. Go stand in the science corner and think about what you just did until the next time we come back with more of Santosh's Science Corner.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, absolutely. And, use the internet lightly and look for, brain stimulating things. Brush your teeth. Don't eat death cat mushrooms. And, have some peanuts.
So that's it for this week.
I feel like Eeyore the old gray scientist right now. Look.
As always, we love to hear your comments, questions, and feedback. If you'd like to support us spiritually, emotionally, or financially, links to do that are in the show notes, along with links for further reading.
Well, I suppose you can brush your teeth if you wanna. Probably won't help, though.
The peanut butter patch had some promise.
Not as well as the oral challenges, but you know.
Our theme music is composed by Rachel Leisure. The show is produced by me with a lot of help from Dr. Eeyore and friends.
We're going to bring out sad researcher Eeyore more in the future. Tell us what you guys think.
And until next time, as always, keep a song in your heart, soap on your hands, a shot in your arm. Find some place that looks interesting. And when you've done all those things, happy travels.
I mean, you're probably going to get diarrhea, but you know.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.